Hello and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Saturday, June 9th, 2018. And this is a special weekend edition of Comic Talk Today. There were some Valiant announcements, I think yesterday or the day before. I wanted to talk about it, and of course, I had to bring in another Valiant fan with me. And joining me on this episode is Dewan Hammonds from the Collecting Valiant podcast. And you're not going to hear him introduce himself because unfortunately we had a little recording kerfuffle and lost about 30 minutes of the episode. Fortunately, when it comes to the discussion of the books themselves and what we think about them, what we hope for Valiant into the future, that's all in this episode in particular. Enjoy it. Have a good weekend. And I'll be back on Monday with Top of the Pile and some new announcements.
I've always been a real big fan of Shadow, like that whole mystic voodoo side. And even like, I might be one of the few people that like Dr. Mirage because they deal with it. Like that one, the second Lives of Dr. Mirage, was that the second series they brought out? That thing was awesome to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the art and dealing with the dark side and wasn't that the dead side and the mystic stuff. I love that stuff because I don't understand it. So it's cool to me. You know, it's like me learning about all that crap at the same time. So it's, I love it. They need to do more.
You remember on I think it was the first series, they had the regular book and then there was a plus edition. And the plus edition had so much stuff on there that I wish they would have put out in the original book, because at the end there was a whole map of the dead side.
Oh,
you remember that?
Yeah.
It was really cool, dude, because there was stuff that we had never seen before.
Wasn't that in the Legends of the Geomancer?
No. That was in the Dr. Mirage Plus Edition number one. There was some back matter, and then at the very end, there was a two-page spread. It was a map of the dead side.
Yeah.
Because what was her name? Jen Van Meter. The stuff that she did there, nobody had ever bothered to flesh out. It made no sense to me. She had like a whole map because when she did the series, the both volumes, she introduced like all these cool places in the dead side.
Right. Man, I think why would it be in the Legends of Geomancer? That doesn't make any sense. So I knew I'd seen it before, it had to be there. I thought it, for some reason, it was in a book that really wasn't out. So that's why I'm thinking it was the Geomancer book, but I could be wrong. I'm going to look through there, man. It's somewhere. But yeah, that thing was cool. And they should have put that out in the, like you said, the regular issue, because then it would give like a roadmap of what's going on instead of it just being introduced right on the page to you. And you're like, where are they at or what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And they should have did it in Wrath. They should have did it in Wrath of the Eternal Warrior too.
Yeah. That would have been good. And the thing about Wrath is it was almost like the dead side, but they never called it the dead side. So it kind of had you wonder, like, well, like, where the hell are we exactly? You know what I mean?
Right. And I wonder if that map, I have to look at it again, if it had some of those areas in there where it kind of tied them together.
Yeah, I remember there were like four different areas, and I think two or three of them were discussed in either volume one or two of Dr. Mirage, and I think one of them never came about. And then when Matt Kent did the Ninjak arc, where they had the Shadowman backup story,
right.
He introduced the Lyceum, and that wasn't on the map. So that was a little weird, because you're like, well, like, where are we exactly? You know what I mean? Like, you're bringing in all this afterlife type stuff, but none of it seems to mesh together.
We're in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, we're in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's where you can do all that stuff.
I thought about that on one of these new books that's announced, Incursion.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming out next year. Let me read you the synopsis here, Dewan.
Okay.
Beyond the margins of human reason, there lies a realm known as the Dead Side, where the souls of the deadly departed linger, and where the gruesome terrors lie in wait to strike at us from the dark. But our dead side isn't the only deadly dimension of its kind, and another, belonging to an alien world, is about to collide with Earth's. Will the nature of our reality at stake? Who will stand against the unearthly terrors at our doorstep? So, what this tells me is, we have our dead side, but it doesn't really mean much, because I guess for every alien planet, each one has its own dead side?
Yeah, I felt the same way you did. Because it's my thing. We don't even know everything about the dead side we have now. Now, and you're going to bring in an alien dead side? So, you know, when I read that, Martin, I'm thinking, like, this is the title they're going to use to expand their new vision or the new characters or new direction of Valiant.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking there's going to be this whole, a lot of space cosmic stuff they're going to introduce. And this is going to be the introduction to it.
Hmm.
And this is where I think us old fogies are going to either stay on board or not. Because we've been this whole time, we know what kind of direction Valiant's going. And we're in our own little sandbox and it's fine. We're having fun. And now they're going to introduce these new kids into our sandbox. And nobody likes new kids in the sandbox. You know, preschool, the new kid comes to the sandbox, he's not really welcome.
Uh-huh.
So that was my initial reaction. This is going to be this. You know, they said after Harbinger War 2, they're going to go in a new direction. I think this book may push us there.
You think so?
Yeah, because before you had like Eternity, and those books were kind of the space books, maybe XO every now and then. But this doesn't seem anything like what Eternity is going to be or whatnot. So I think we're gonna get our whole cosmic side from here. What do you think?
I don't know. That's interesting. I was trying to figure out what I thought about this. I almost wanted to talk about this book last because I still wasn't sure, but it just came up in discussion. So, you know, whatever. It felt weird, right? Because you're right. Like, if we're not fleshing out the dead side we already have, why bring in another dead side? And especially if it's written by Andy Diggle, right? Like, he's doing the Shadow Man book. So surely he's got ideas on what he wants to do with Shadow Man in that dead side. Why bring in another one? The thing that concerned me the most, and this is the thing, right? As Valiant fans, I think oftentimes we get stuck with continuity. And when you think about it, like, there was something similar to this in 4001 AD when they had that Shadow Man book. The 4001 AD Shadow Man, the basis of that story was that at some point in the future, the Dead Side crashed into Earth, and this place where that book took place was kind of like a mix of the Dead Side and Earth, right? Like, those two cultures were living together side by side.
Right.
But if we're bringing in this alien Dead Side, like, how does that affect everything we've seen already? Right, and that's not something that's explained.
Yeah, this is. I don't get it at all.
I'm assuming this may be one of your. I don't want to say least favorite. Maybe that's the worst thing to say. One of the most confusing, at least, announcements.
Yeah, because they don't tell you what characters are going to be here, so you assume, like you said, Shadow Man will be in here. Fighting, like, so you're just basically expanding the dead side and you're making it a cosmic dead side. So, I mean, I can see from Valiant's standpoint, it gives them basically an unlimited platform to work with that they can expand and tell new stories with. But to your point, we haven't even fleshed out our dead side yet. It's weird.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. And who's going to be in here? Like, Shadow Man?
Well, maybe Shadow Man. I mean, it's an alien dead side, right? So it could be all brand new characters.
So are all the alien people from Eternity going to die and then be in this dead side? And it comes to Earth and you bring them to Earth?
I mean, maybe.
But is the dead side really Earth? I mean, they treat it kind of like an opposite of life on Earth with a mystic side to it, but
yeah, but it's kind of not too, right? Yeah. I don't
know, man.
This is the one that confused me the most. And granted, it's not coming out for another, what, like 7-8 months. So there could be a lot that happens in the universe from now till then that could maybe introduce some of this stuff. But it just seems weird, right? Because, like, I saw the previews for the upcoming arc of Shadow Man. And right now he's kind of going back and forth between the Dead Side and the Baron Samedi stuff. Right. But it seems like with the next arc, he's going to be, like, jumping through time. Because I think they're introducing, like a 1930s era type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, dude. Like, it seems like a lot to do with a character that's been gone for so long in such a short period of time.
Like they're cramming it in?
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, like, some of the stuff makes total sense to me. And I like the fledging out of the voodoo pantheon and all that stuff. I love that stuff.
Right.
The stuff they introduced in issue 3 with maybe the Loa not being what we thought it was. Like, I like that, right? Because you can go in a new direction. But this seems like a big jump from that. Yeah, if it's any way related.
This is why you don't let creators do drugs, man. This is because you get stuff like this, and then people are like, "This is awesome." But no, you know what though? I don't understand it. But I think Aaron said it too. Like, out of all four of the books, this is the one that he is going to pick up, and it's curious enough for me that I'm interested, and I'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Because I want to see what happens. But will new readers pick it up? Probably not.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. I mean, I'm still on Valiant. You know, I may not be up to date on every single book. I know I'm behind on, like, Conan and Woody, a couple issues, for example. But but I still buy everything the day it comes out. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, this would be a good book on the collecting side that you may want to pick up, because I think, depending if they market it well. If they don't, if they just do a normal marketing on it, it probably will have a low print run.
Well, and I think a lot of the Divinity books did really well for collectors, right? Especially those 1 in 40s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're right. At least from a collector's point of view, it could be worth your while to pick these up.
I found out from just my little bit of experience here recently is that any book that the title people don't know about, like they went with Eternity, the Britannia books, those books people probably won't pick up on, like issue 1, 2, and 3. So those are ones, if you do want to spend an extra coin and you're a collector and you want to, you know, speculate on something, get those books, because the print runs are probably going to be low. I mean, you even look at Savage, you know, people are like, what the hell is Savage? Okay.
Oh yeah. And Savage was very small print run.
Exactly. So that 1 in 50 was, you know, Dinesh kind of leaked that out early, like, pick it up because the print run's low.
Yep. Yeah. All right, let's go to Faith Dreamside number 1.
Mm-hmm.
This is written by Jody Hauser, who has been helming the book for quite a while. Art by MJ Kim and the cover by Marguerite Sauvage. Let me ask you first of all, because they only announced one cover for all these. Do you think, as a collector, Valiant is going to stick with the formula they've been sticking with in terms of covers?
That's a great question. I would think they should, if they look at their numbers.
Yeah.
Because people like dummies like me, I pick up cover A, B, and C, and then the variants when I can. So, you know, like, you get a few dummies like me, you're selling a book at least 3 times over.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you just do a cover A or maybe a cover A and B, you're losing out on money. Now, maybe this new ownership group, they don't care because their projections are, we're going to make our money on the movie side, and maybe they want to save money. But with me saying that, when we were at C2E2, Fred Pierce had said they were throwing more money at the budget. You know, they did their budget projections on what they would need to produce the books or whatnot. Hmm. And the company said, is that all you need? you know, basically like, we're going to open up our pocketbooks, you know, tell us what you need. So from him saying that, I would think, and him being the constant in the room from the old regime to the new one, I would think they would keep the same, you know, A, B, and C covers plus the variants.
Interesting. Yeah. See, that that gives me additional hope.
Yeah.
Additional hope. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. I mean, granted, this is like an announcement, right? So they're not going to have variant covers because most of these books aren't coming out for, you know, 4 months on the line at least. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure whenever the solicits come out, they'll announce variants. But, you know, the one thing about Valiant is you're always guaranteed at least one variant.
Right.
Right. You always have the A cover, the B cover, and then like a 1 in 10 and either a 1 in 20 or 1 in 50.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So back to Faith Deadside. It's no secret that I'm not the biggest Faith fan.
All right. End of podcast. We're done.
It is no secret. But, you know, I think the good thing about the Faith book is it's always been the same writer. And mm-hmm. that's important, I think, for a lot of people. In particular, when we're in a comic industry where you change writers all the damn time, you change creative teams all the damn time, to have somebody with a vision to execute a particular type of story. And, you know, if I'm not the audience for this, it's fine. But at the same time, like, you know, Jody's got a vision and, you know, people are buying this book mm-hmm. and Valiant continues to push it. So it must be worth their time to continue it. And you know, I'm reading Jody over on Gotham AD, Mother Panic Gotham AD.
You love it.
I love the shit out of that book. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not about the writer. There's just something about Faith that's not connecting with me, and that's okay, right? Like, not every book has to appeal to every single person.
Yeah, and we've said this before. This book is made for a targeted audience, and it's successful. They're going to keep putting it out.
Yeah.
And I think you can see from the main characters in this book, it's going to be Faith and Amelia and Dr. Mirage.
Yep.
So you can see where they're hyper focusing this book on their female audience, and maybe even kind of like maybe teenagers or young or 20-year-olds, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like late teens, early 20s, female is mostly the target for this book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Like you want to have a varied audience, right? In particular, if you want to grow your company.
Yeah.
So
and we've got a big comic book store here called The Laughing Ogre. And it's manned most of the time. It's worked on whatever. I'm having too many beers. A lot of the people that work there are ladies, and it reminds me of ladies that would read this. They're like comic book nerd geeks, maybe a couple piercings, some tats, and they love comic books.
Yeah.
And I can just see them reading the crap out of this book.
Yep.
So I think that's their audience, and they're hitting home runs with it.
Now, for like a more hardcore Valiant fan, do you think the fact that this is called Faith Dreamside make it a little confusing? I mean, we're just talking about the dead side, right? Like, what the hell is the dream side?
Didn't they do this in the last Faith run?
They kind of did this in the last Faith run. Dysart played with the dream side a little bit when he was doing Harbinger. I'm not sure how many people will be into this thing. You know what I mean?
And didn't they do this with like the Faith Christmas?
Yeah, the Faith Christmas special. Yeah, and the artist for this book is the artist from that that one shot.
Yeah, I'm only interested in it because of Dr. Mirage. That's the reason why I'll read this one.
Yep.
But I'm not a dreamy kind of guy.
You know, since you said that, I wonder if, you know, Valiant's trying to hit different markets, and I think it's most obvious in these four books that are announced, because they do hit the most varied audiences. But I wonder if maybe Valiant shouldn't double down on one particular audience. And I'm not even saying like the true hardcore Valiant fan, because we know those guys. I mean, that's us. We're going to buy them anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But like, we haven't seen a Dr. Mirage book since 2015, I think. 2016?
Probably 16. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the book that really fleshed out a lot of stuff in this magic universe that we hadn't seen anywhere else. Even if we've had magic-based books before. And I think, you know, they already had a strong female writer doing that. Who brought in, like we said previously, a lot of new stuff into the Dead Side. Why not double down on that? You've already got this new Shadow Man book that's really diving into that stuff. Why not do a companion book to it?
You know, maybe they're trying to put like an all-star group of characters together, kind of like a dream team. I mean, you've got Aunt Amelia, so you could probably get the younger girls in here, and then our female audience. And then you've got Faith fans, and then you've got the Dr. Mirage fans. So it's like they may be just trying to hit as many women as they can to come in this book. And I agree with you. If it's so similar to some of the other books out there, why don't you just kind of wove them, put them together, basically,
yeah,
and hit everybody.
Well, so let me ask you though, if we go to the Livewire, mm-hmm. don't you feel like maybe that would be a more successful book for a wider female audience than Faith would be? I mean, Faith's already established, right? Like, we've had her in Harbinger. She's had her own book. She's had a couple of, you know, miniseries coming after that. Livewire has never had a book. But the thing about Livewire is she's a strong female lead. Mm-hmm. She's African-American. She just had a couple of really amazing story arcs with Eric Heiserer doing her on Secret Weapons.
Right.
Obviously, she's a big part in Harbinger Wars. Don't you feel like maybe that would be a book that would target a bigger audience and include a large female demographic?
I don't know. I think a lot of guys like Livewire.
That is true. I love the shit out of some Livewire.
And it's almost like, I don't want to say not that she's not a female. It's not as obvious. Like, the Faith books, you can tell they... Like, maybe with the artist and the storytelling, they really are focused on that woman's demographic, where Livewire, it seems like the typical female comic book character from, you know, and other companies put out, you know, it's geared to kind of a male audience, and then females will jump on it because maybe it's a female and they'd like the Livewire character, but it kind of seems like a more traditional comic book that a lot of guys will gravitate to.
I mean, you're probably right. So one of the book ideas that I've had for forever was a Livewire book. Mm-hmm. And I asked those guys, why the hell are you not doing a Livewire book? My original idea was a joint Livewire Ginger story set in space. But, you know, with the direction that Livewire has taken over the last couple of months, well, I guess over the last year, with what, you know, Eric and Raul and Patricia were doing on Secret Weapons, I think it makes perfect sense that to give her finally her own book. And this is going to be a miniseries, and I'm okay with that. And this branches off directly from Harbinger Wars 2. I don't know. I'm assuming you already read the first issue.
Harbinger Wars 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read the first couple.
Okay, you read the first couple. That's fine. That's good enough. It seems pretty obvious to me, and that's an idea that they play with in that miniseries, that a lot of this is kind of Livewire's fault. Go ahead.
Yeah, like she makes decisions that she thinks are helpful, but then she causes some issues along the way.
But it makes it worse, yeah. And so this book kind of deals with whatever the repercussions will be of Harbinger Wars 2 and how she deals with that, right? The fact that she kind of set things up to get this whole thing started. And I don't know if that's something that we've had in a Valiant book before, right? We've seen it, I think, many times in other publishers where a character is key into furthering certain events that are universe changing. But not in Valiant. And, you know, I hope this doesn't mean that the way that they treat Livewire will be, I guess, maybe cliched, right? I don't want this to be like a typical, like, I feel bad because I killed everybody kind of story.
I don't see that. I don't see that, Martin. And I don't want to kind of interrupt, but I see her as the table was set and she put all the pieces in motion by what she did. You know, all these different things have been set up in the Valiant universe, you know, with Peter and, you know, the Harbinger kids and Toyo Harada and, you know, Hardcore and all this stuff. Omen, Bloodshot, it's all there. It was all set up. And I think what she did in that first issue was, or the preview issue or whatnot, just set it all in motion. Like the board was already set. So I think, are you saying like she might be the scapegoat for all this?
Well, I'm hoping that she's not the scapegoat for this.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think so. She could be. They could probably try to turn her into that, but I think all the wheels were in motion and she just was the spark that lit it. And
yeah.
The powder keg blew and the horse is out the barn.
Very possible. I do like the creative team that's on this. It's Vida Ayala, who she worked on Supergirl, I think it was, for over at DC. She is, I want to say she's Puerto Rican and Black, if I'm not mistaken.
Watch out, Daryl.
She's also, well, no, because I'm pretty sure she's also a lesbian writer. So I think the choice of creative team is very interesting here, because I think Vida could bring a very different perspective to Livewire than we've seen. You know, she was always kind of, she was an important character, but she was kind of secondary, right? And mm-hmm. and when Eric wrote her in Secret Weapons, she really started to rise to the limelight. And he did a great job at showing how important this character is. But I think it's, I don't want to get into this conversation, right? I very firmly believe that male writers can write female characters and female characters can write, or female writers can write male characters. I don't see that as a problem. But sometimes when you want to try a new direction, it could be interesting to see what a writer that can maybe connect more on a personal level with a character can do with a specific character, right? And Livewire is one of those characters where, as much as we've seen her over the years, we don't know a lot about her.
Right.
I mean, like, think about the stuff we know about her. There was like a couple flashback scenes, and this goes to show how great a writer Dysart is, right? There were a couple of flashback scenes between Toyo Harada and Livewire, and that's what really established her character. Aside from that, we really didn't have anything until this past year with Secret Weapons,
right? But those flashback scenes had like really interesting elements in it that set up. It makes your imagination run with the possibilities of the character, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
She was on the inside with the Harbinger Foundation. You know, we go through the whole history. You know, she was kind of like Toya Harada's pet project, right? The kind of the one he really loved that he cared about.
Yep.
And she's powerful. So She's exciting. But what do you think about this, Martin? I mean, the way they set this up is, you know, she's coming in off of Harbinger War II, and she needs to decide what kind of hero she will be, or if she will be one at all. Like, is that interesting to you?
I'm trying to wrestle with that a little bit. Because I like the fact that she has been in the background a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, oddly enough, where she shines the most, being in the background, because of the nature of her abilities. She doesn't need to be at the limelight, right? And
right.
And in Secret Weapons, she could be there because the people she was brought in to kind of tutor, in a way, they had no knowledge of their abilities. And obviously she did, right? Because she's kind of been in this place where she was abandoned by Toyo.
Mm-hmm.
But having this be a solo book where she doesn't have to grasp with being a leader of any sort, could be an interesting take. I'm not going to be sold on it until I actually see the book, but I think the direction could be really interesting, where we finally learn who this character is. I think that's important, right? Like, a lot of us have been asking for a solo Livewire book for forever, and now we're getting one.
That's my whole point. Like, we've always wanted it. We know the potential in the character, with the character. But to me, it almost seems like, you know, a Peter Parker Spider-Man origin story. You know, at first when Uncle Ben died, Peter Parker was like, I don't want to be a superhero. I'm going to make money and do this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, you know, then Uncle Ben died, and then he's forced with trying to be a superhero. So it almost seems like, should I even do this or should I not? Like, are we going to get this whole same thing over where you have this conflicted superhero, basically? I don't know if I want to see that story again. So they really are going to have to blow me off my feet with this one, because the way they're selling it, I'm just like, we've seen this before.
Well, my one concern is I don't want this to be like a Wolverine story, right?
Okay.
Because like when we knew nothing about Wolverine was awesome because we knew nothing about him. And then once we learn about like the Weapon X project, and you know, he lived in Japan and this and that and the other, he wasn't as cool because you kind of knew the story,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's almost like not knowing made him a better character. And now that you know, you're just like, okay, like he's fine, whatever. You know, like if a really good writer wants to bring him in and write him into an X-Men book, then that's fine. But like, I don't care as much as I did before.
Yeah, it almost seems like this is a good first arc of a longer run, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a test, right? I mean, it's a miniseries, so maybe they're going to play with it and see how it goes. And if it works out well for them, then it could turn into a faith.
That's true, and that's Valiant's MO been this whole time, right? They'll throw something out, and give it 4 to 6 issues or something, and mm-hmm. then if it goes, they'll get another one out there. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The last book is Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 1, written by my boys, Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, art by Ken Lashley, who did a bunch of stuff over at Black Panther. This is the one that I'm most excited about. And I know I heard some people say, like, ugh, like a prequel story, like, why do I care?
Mm-hmm.
We've had so much stuff about Bloodshot. Why does this matter? First of all, it matters because my boys are writing this book.
Well, that's big.
Obviously, I'm going to pick this up. I'm very excited for this. I think Zach and Lonnie do really interesting character studies in all the books that they do. Obviously, a lot of stuff they have out now is creator-owned stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people don't understand the character progressions. I think the only mainstream character they've tackled so far is Cable, and the stuff that they're doing in Cable I think is really exciting because it very much honors the original stories and expands on what Cable is. I think their arc on Cable's like 5 or 6 issues. And, you know, Cable's been around since the 90s, so we'll just say 30 years. A lot of people know and love Cable very much. The stories that they're telling on that book, and I don't know if you're reading it, but the stories they tell in that book, a lot of them take place in between stories we already know. And so if you're a fan of that character, it gives you like a little extra on who that character is. And I think as a result, these two guys are really perfect for Bloodshot, in particular with the story that they're trying to tell, because it is a prequel story. And, you know, it may not necessarily be Ray that's in this book, but we're going to learn about the Bloodshot program, because as we learn from Lemire's run, Ray is not the only Bloodshot. You know, there's been many others.
Yeah.
And how did those guys get in place? I mean, really, if you want to go back and get nitty gritty about it, we really don't know how Ray got to be Ray.
True. I was thinking about that. I wanted to know if I missed an origin story somewhere. And I couldn't think of one.
No, and we've had 0 issues. But they didn't really delve into how he got to this place. And this is the only one out of the 4 books announced that's an ongoing series. And granted, you know, ongoing means nothing nowadays, right? It could be 10, 12 issues. But I think that's really interesting that they're going to allow these guys to tell a different kind of story. And I promise you that this will be unlike anything else that Valiant has done, because Zach and Lonnie are very much about, you know, delving into different sides of characters and very much going deep into like the psychological aspects of characters, and what it means to be a certain thing, in this case, Bloodshot. And for that reason, this is the reason I'm most excited about Bloodshot's Rising Spirit #1. Zach and Lonnie, I think, are really tuned into like what makes people, right? What makes people act the way they act, and if there's one character at Valiant that could really use from that, it's Bloodshot, because I think a lot of times the way he's used is kind of a weapon, because he's got so much power.
Mm-hmm.
Like what else are you going to do with them? You know, and what Jeff Lemire did was interesting, because he delved into more of the personal aspects of it. I think what Zach and Lonnie, based on the stuff that I've read from them, I think what they could do with Bloodshot is going to go even more in depth than Jeff Lemire did.
Well, you sold me on it, because my initial take on it was, I thought this was going to be a gentle reboot of Bloodshot.
I mean, you know, going back. In some ways it is.
Okay.
Yeah, in some ways it is.
That's what I thought. I didn't think it's such a popular character with Valiant. It's a staple character. I got the idea that they didn't want to just do a total just reboot and new side of Bloodshot. They kind of said, okay, we'll go back to an origin story and shift him just a little bit, so we can take him in the direction we want to go for the movie. And the new ownership has said that. They want to start telling stories in the comic books that will set up the movies.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. I think you need that right now, right? I mean, Bloodshot's supposed to start going into production next month, in July.
Mm-hmm. But aren't they telling the old Bloodshot story from the 90s Valiant Comics?
Kind of.
Okay.
Kind of.
The whole, what was his name?
Oh God, I can't remember his name. Dude, that book was really good though.
Start with an M, like his last name was
No,
how are we Valiant fans and we don't know this stuff?
It was with an M. It was a mob story, though, right?
Right.
It was very different from this. Now we have this whole Rising Spirit and government conspiracy stuff. Back when Bloodshot was going in the 90s, it was a mob story until later on when it became a vampire story.
Jeez.
We're not going to go there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, we're not going to go there. That's when it went downhill. But the mob stuff was really cool, dude. The mob stuff was really cool. I don't think it would hold up today. So I think that's why it makes sense that they changed a lot of that stuff. But it was very, very much of the times. I mean, dude, think about it. Like, mid-90s, by the mid-90s, pretty much all the mob bosses were in jail. Right,
yeah,
so
but
like,
they still had history.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And think about, like, if you go back all the way to the Golden Age, like, if you read Golden Age comics, every single villain was a mob boss of some sort.
Right. And it's funny you say that, because in the Clone Saga I'm reading, it's mob bosses in there.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
And his name was Angelo Mortale.
There you go. Mortale. Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Yes.
But this is the one that I'm most excited about. And I think for a lot of people, maybe they're the most weary about it. I really don't think you should be. I've had a chance to talk to these guys. Obviously, I read all their work. I'm a big fan of both of these guys, and I firmly believe that they could do really great things with Bloodshot. And really different things, too, right? You don't want the same kind of stories all the time. And I know, you know, people were really upset when Dysart left Harbinger and that whole section of the world. I'm sure there's people going to be upset with Jeff Lemire leaving the Bloodshot section of the world. But that's okay. You know, you want to try new stuff and see if it works. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, like, as much as I love Matt Kent, to me, Matt Kent's X of Manowar is nowhere near what Venditti was doing. But it's still good.
It's different, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different kind of story. So,
right. Well, it sounds like you got a really good feeling about this. So if you're that confident in it, then I can be confident in it. So
yeah, I'm confident. And the thing is, like, Zach and Lonnie are very much inspired by, like, film, and knowing their taste in film, I think this could end up being really interesting. To make a comparison, since Jeff Lemire was working on it, I've been a Moon Knight fan for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And when Warren Ellis came back and did that relaunch of Moon Knight, where they kind of made the book a lot more psychological, and then Lemire took over Ellis when Ellis left, the book itself was night and day from the original Doug Mensch Moonshot or Moon Knight. But it worked. You know, it gave the character a new direction and new meaning. And maybe that's what Bloodshot needs, right? Like, we've tried the Bloodshot versus Syat thing, and that was awesome, but that was over. Then we had the Bloodshot hardcore stuff, and it was great, but then that's over. We had the Bloodshot having a family thing, but now that's over. So, I mean, where do you go next? Right? You've got to find some way to evolve the story. And, you know, I think bringing these guys in, it's really exciting. Really exciting.
So this is going to be the first Bloodshot, right? This, like you said, it's not Ray. Can you say or whatnot? Like, this is going to be the first Rising Spirit version of Bloodshot?
The first Rising Spirit version of Bloodshot, yes.
See, I was led to believe, like, the first couple ones didn't really work out. Isn't that kind of what we were told, Bloodshot Island or whatnot?
You're correct.
So this is going to be a new spin?
And this will dive into that somewhat.
Okay.
They mentioned the solicit about the memory Uber, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to experiment with this super soldier, and it's not always going to work out.
Right.
Until you get to the guy that we know as Bloodshot.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Because they had to perfect the nanites. Because didn't one of the older Bloodshots, I forgot their names, didn't he have to get new nanites put in? Because, what was the World War One?
Oh, Bloodshot. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was like hard as nails, tough ass, but he had to get a nanite reboot because his nanites were kind of old. So
yep.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting, especially, you know, since Bloodshot Island was so recent that, you know, if this is, hopefully it's a gentle reset and not a hard one. You know, that will help me.
No, I think what Valiant's been doing has been somewhat of a soft reset for a lot of the stuff, right? With Ninja K and with EXO and Shadow Man,
mm-hmm.
they're sticking mostly to the original stuff from 2012, 2013. But you know, going in new directions, and you know, I think it's time for Bloodshot to go in that direction.
That's true.
We haven't really had a reset, right? I mean, you can maybe say somewhere between the time that Bloodshot was a solo book to the time that the hardcore came in was kind of a reset. This might be a little bit harder than that, but you know, that's okay. You know, with Livewire, I was saying I maybe don't want the mystique to go away. With Bloodshot, I kind of do.
All right. I just don't want to acclaim reset. You know, I can't do an acclaim reset.
I mean, when you say an acclaim reset, it depends how you think about it, right? So, like, the acclaim EXO reset, I'm totally with you. I don't think that worked for me whatsoever.
Ninjak.
You didn't like... See, I thought the Ninjak one was really interesting. Because, here's the thing. The whole video game, like, kind of VR type thing was weird. But in many ways, the story that it tried to tell was ahead of its time by like 5 years, 10 years. Just the way that it was told didn't quite live up to the premise, I think. And that's why it failed.
Okay.
But I kind of liked the Ninjak in the Acclaim days. It was not at all the spy story that we had in VEI or in VH1, and definitely not the spy story we're getting now with Ninja K. But it was fine. I mean, it was a video game company, right? You got to think about that. It was a video game company, and it was very much tied to the stuff that company was doing.
Yeah, but this ain't video games, man.
Well, sure, but I guarantee you, though, if that kind of story was told to the target Valiant audience, it could have been really good. The problem is they made that book very much like a YA-type book. And by doing that, it dumbed down a lot of the concepts where they kind of didn't work out in the end.
Okay.
I think Ninja could have been a strong book. Same with like Troublemakers. Troublemakers could have been a fantastic book. But the problem is that they try to tell it more like a YA book, and people reading those books were not YA readers.
Right. See? I don't know. And I don't think the new forces at Valiant are gonna do something like that. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how people take this new direction. You know, I'm open to it, but time or tell, you know. But we know one thing, Aaron will not like it. For one.
That is true. For one. That is true. Yeah, here's the thing you got to remember, right? As much as I have maybe been a Debbie Downer over the last couple of months about Valiant, I still pick up all the books. I still enjoy them for the most part, and you know, they're in a rebuilding phase. You know, you can't expect these guys to have, like, super polished books out the get-go, right? Because the stuff that, like, Dinesh and Warren and everybody was doing, they were planning out 6-12 months ahead. So when those books were coming out, like, you know, they knew what was coming out a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, this may be the chunk of books where, with the new team, these guys have a chunk of the next year in advance planned. And that's something to be excited about.
Oh, it is. The thing that concerns me is, you know, every group, when they come in, they have their growing pains. So we went through the growing pains with Dinesh and Warren and that group. Are people up to going through the growing pains with this group?
You're right. And that's the tough thing, right? Because mm-hmm. in 2012, the comic book market was very different.
Right.
Very, very different. You know, now everyone's doing the digital stuff. DC's about to announce their universe service. You had the Amazon stuff. And there's a lot more competition now. You know, in 2012, it was Marvel and DC and Image. And, yeah. And now we have, you know, 20 other publishers doing indie stuff that I think is really exciting. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, you can see they're bringing on new talent here, too, and that may be their answer to that, to keep it fresh and keep it competitive.
That's a great point, because the last time we had that was when they brought in, like, Venditti and Matt Kent and Dysart. Who else was in that run?
Who's the artist? Miko?
Yeah, Miko came in at that time. Lewis came in at that time. Yeah, you're right. So it's a rebuilding time, and now we're getting exciting new talent. And the talent is very diverse. So
the true test is when they have that Shadow Man period where you can say, this is going nowhere. You know, you know, when Shadow Man had his bad run, that's going to be the true test. Are people going to say, we're going to fight through this with you guys because we believe in you? Or we're going to say, I may buy one or two titles and we'll see where we go in 6 months.
Yep.
And see, that's where I think our previous conversation about the passion that the previous group had, you know, even though we didn't like that Shadow Man run, we didn't really go anywhere. Nobody was saying, I'm dumping Valiant. It was just like, guys, you got to fix this, you know, do something with it. You know, we trust you. Just do something with it. You made a misstep somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, will we still have that stick-to-itness with this group when they have that situation? Because it's going to happen. I mean, it happens with all common companies. So, to be nice, we'll see.
I mean, you know, if this is the rebuilding, then it might take another 6 months to a year. You know, and I think as Valiant fans, we kind of have to stick through that. I just hope that people outside of Valiant fandom have the patience to stick with that and don't say, like, hey, I tried Valiant and I'm kind of done with it now, because that stuff didn't work out for me.
Yeah. And I think they'll make a bad move if they do a total rebuild. They've got a nice foundation here, guys. I mean, you could do a remodel of the house, but don't tear the whole thing down.
Well, and you know, you've got 6 years of stories that you can build on.
Yeah.
So you don't need to actually rebuild every single thing. Just, you know, like, get a new roof. That'll probably be all right. Don't build a new house.
Put some bushes out front, paint the outside.
There you go.
Yeah.
Pressure wash the front, you know, you're good to go.
Wow. I agree with you. I agree with you. Put a fire pit out back. That's all you need.
Oh, man. That was the best thing I did, is put a fire pit in the back. I don't use it, though, because it's so damn hot outside.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. Do you use it in the winter?
Yeah, I do use it in the winter. I use the hell out of it in the winter. We roast marshmallows back there. Whenever I do any remodeling in the house, I throw everything on the fire pit and burn it. But not in the summertime, dude. It's too hot.
you got to cut your grass at like 5 a.m. because it gets too damn hot.
Uh-huh.
Jeez.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
All right, let's wrap this up, Dewan.
Yes.
It has been a pleasure having you on. I hope
Thank
you guys,
for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hope you guys come back with some more Collecting Valiant.
We will. We will.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. You can find Dewan on Twitter at Collect Valiant and, of course, the Collecting Valiant podcast. Make sure you catch the earlier episodes to hear them geek out about variant covers, et cetera, et cetera. It's always a pleasure hearing you guys go deep into that stuff because I don't really do that stuff on this podcast, you know. I'm not a big variant guy, but I love hearing. I can always tell when somebody's passionate about something, right? And it's obvious you guys are passionate about not just Valiant comics, but collecting comic books in general. And that's I think that's important, especially now. You know, I was just having a small chat with our buddy Mike Myers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I posted a quote that I read in an article about DC launching their streaming service. Because they're going to have comics on there, apparently.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, retailers better be damn careful going forward. Because if DC does this, like, you know, it's one thing if, like, Valiant did it or Lion Forge or, you know, Aftershock or Vault or whatever. But when Marvel and DC make big moves, like, that will really hurt retailers, right? And my thing was, I think there's always going to be a space for comic shops, but I feel like I really do feel this honestly. In 10 years, we're not going to have a comic shop like we have now. It'll be a comic shop kind of tailored to people like you that collect books, because I think in a large chunk the market is going to kind of move to digital, and it's not going to be feasible for comics to support people that own a shop. If that's all they stick with, so we'll see.
They're gonna have to go boutique like.
Yeah, it's like that was my exact thing. You've got to have a boutique store, like an antique bookshop, right? Where,
right.
Like, you can go to the shop and get your old ass books, or you can go to their online store and get them that way. You know.
And he had a great, just to give a plug to him. I listened to his weekly reads.
Yeah, Mike
he talked about.
Reads.
Yeah, he talked about Amazing Spider-Man 800.
Oh, yeah.
The one he was sick on. And he said the guy wanted two of every variant that came out for that book. And he spent, was it like $3,000?
Yeah, I think he said like $5,000.
Jeez.
It's crazy.
There's going to be collectors. Like you said, if you've got a boutique shop, you can probably, it'll be like vinyl records are now,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people still buy the crap out of them, but not in mass like they used to.
Absolutely. You can find Dewan at Collect Valiant. I'm at GeekVine. The show doesn't have a Twitter account because I no longer believe in that. But you can email the show, comiccooktoday@gmail.com. I will be back tomorrow with the Top of the Pile. It's also the 50th episode. So I'm going to be announcing some new segments coming up on the show because I don't want to get bored and do the same stuff all the time. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you then.